You're listening to We Love Where You Live, the podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Matt Bach.
Well, welcome to another edition of We Love Where You Live, the podcast series. I am Matt Bach, Director of Communications with the Michigan Municipal League. And today I'm very excited to have a couple guests. One, I have the league's Chris Hackbarth, our Director of State and Federal Affairs. And Chris is on with me to talk with State Senator Jeremy Moss. Jeremy is one of our two Legislators of the Year honorees that the Michigan Municipal League was going to recognize during our Capitol Conference in March. But of course, because of the coronavirus pandemic, that was canceled. So we're doing it a little differently. We're doing a tribute video in honor of Senator Moss and doing this podcast to kind of talk to him. So first, Senator Moss, I want to congratulate you on receiving the Legislator of the Year award.
Thank you so much. It's an honor. I've been working with the league since I was a Southfield City Councilman and then every day in the legislature as I served on the local government committees in both the House and Senate. So this award truly means a lot to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you probably, you know, there's different awards out there, but because you have that local municipal background, you were there's a lot of youngest first titles in front of your name. And I believe you were the first and youngest elected to the Southfield City Council.
That's right.
Back in your mid-20s. You know, what does it mean to, you know, to have that local government experience and then be recognized by the MML in this way?
So when I was on the city's council, I was the youngest elected official in the city's history when I was 25 when I was elected. And I served with a council of 55-year-olds, 65-year-olds, 75-year-olds, a couple 80-year-olds, and the oldest local elected official at the time who was on our city council, who was 93. So there was a little bit of a gap there, and I definitely think that I brought a valuable perspective to the city council. But I loved every minute of being on the city council and didn't run away from city council to join the legislature because I wanted to escape some of the issues at the local level. I wanted to advocate for the issues at the local level in the state legislature. And my first term in the state house, I was the top ranking Democrat on the House Local Government Committee to advocate for resources that are needed back home. So I ran because Lansing was balancing its books on the backs of local governments. Everybody who is a local council member who's listening to that absolutely knows what I'm talking about. And so we've done some tremendous work reversing bad trends, restoring revenue sharing, promoting placemaking. And so in that time that I've served in the House and now the Senate, I've been a fierce advocate because of that experience at the local level.
Yeah,
and I'll say this, Matt, I'll say this too. It's one of the things that I appreciate most about Senator Moss, and one of the things that you know, caused us to look for him to be our honoree this past year was how every single time there's an issue that impacts local government, Senator Moss is in direct contact with one of us on our team. And he's always working with us to find out, all right, where is the league on this? What is going on with this? As we come into the local government committees, he's not deferring to us, but coming to us and saying, all right, where is this at? Where is the league at? How can we make this better for communities? What are the concerns? What are the issues we need to address? And he's been just the most solid partner in the legislature on issues that come up.
And yet it took 6 years to get this award, but that's fine. I wasn't counting.
He's not bitter.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Waiting for it to blossom in full, like a fine exactly. Bottle of wine.
I accept that.
That's right. I remember seeing you, I think, when you attended a couple of our conventions or Capitol Conference. You know, you were on the Southfield City Council, and I'm like, this young guy. I mean, I knew then that, you know, you obviously knew what you're talking about and you were passionate. Even back then, you were striving to get more education and using what the tools and the services that League provide to help you do that.
I am the two-time cover model of The Review, the MML magazine. I just want that to be on.
You've been on twice?
Well. Mm-hmm.
You've been on twice? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really nice. I'm sure it's refreshing for Chris, can probably expand on this, but, you know, so often we spend a lot of our times, you know, in Lansing, you know, educating the new legislators about what is revenue sharing and what is placemaking, and you already have those terms and you know what those things are. What kind of advantage or what, you know, how does that help you? What kind of perspective does that give you when you kind of look at things?
So I'm in year six in the legislature. I served 4 years in the state house, and I'm in my second year in the state senate. And every year I have referenced that MML chart where it ranks every state in terms of support from the state to their local units of government. And every state supports at different levels, amounts of revenue sharing. And at the very end is number 50, that is underneath the bar chart, that goes into the negative, and it's Michigan. And so referencing that resource from MML and then using the MML website and the dashboard that you provide, I feel like we've gotten more people on our side in the legislature to realize what a problem it is when you defund local communities, that there is a direct line between stripping revenue sharing, coming in with emergency managers, and sometimes creating more havoc in a community. So understanding that language as a councilman is important, because now I'm able to digest it and verbalize it to my legislative colleagues who don't have that experience. And that chart I have referenced and has been a tool for me to make gains in terms of things that we need to do to support our local communities.
Right. And one of the things we talk about, you know, it's not just about the money. It's about what you can do with the money, creating vibrant places and spaces. And we talk about the concept of placemaking. And you're a firm believer in that, too. Why so much support in that area and that thinking?
So it's interesting. So that's the reason I ran for the Southfield City Council. As I mentioned, you know, we had a council of elders that was talking about trying to bring young people into our community. This is around 2010, 2011. And one council member would say to the other, well, studies show that young people want this. And another council member would say, well, I saw a study that showed that young people want this. And I'm sitting kind of as council observer, as a candidate, but, you know, just as a resident of the city, thinking I don't need a study to show what placemaking looks like, what young people want in a community. And so that's why I ran. I ran to promote some of these measures that many cities since have employed to bring a sense of place to Michigan communities. We know that people my age bracket, I'm a millennial, people my age bracket, certainly when they were in their 20s, I'm now in my 30s, but when we were in our 20s, we were looking for a place to live first, then seeking employment in those places. So, you know, we can do everything we can do in the legislature to attract business growth, but if we don't have those cities vibrant and thriving, doesn't matter. You know, we should close up shop. And so that's why the things that the league has advocated for are things that I've been advocating for even from my very first campaign for city council.
Right. And one of the things that you're very passionate about is the concept of local control. Which is, you know, the local cities make their own decisions. What's some of the, you know, why is your stance on that issue? What are some of the issues you've had to kind of go to bat on that topic?
Again, you know, so I know that you're going to have a podcast with the Republican winner of this award, who is a good friend of mine, Gary Howell. But from a Democratic perspective, I have had to hear the tired talking points time and time again of local control, local control, local control, until the state wants to come in and reclaim control from local units of government. So I have been, as a left-leaning Democrat, the biggest advocate for local control in the state legislature and stopping this stripping of what communities can and cannot do. You know, I'll tell you, we had, I'm trying to think if it was, yeah, it was, there was a legislative effort to stop communities from taxing soda, pop. And no community in Michigan was even doing that. So, you know, there are so many things that we should trust our locals to figure out at the local level. And every community at the local level said, we are not going to tax junk food. We are not going to tax pop and other things like that. But still, big state government had to come in and tell you what to do, even though you weren't doing it anyway. And so I've seen that hypocrisy play out time and time again in the legislature. And I'm the first one to call it out.
Right. Now, in this, go ahead,
say, Matt. That's one of the things I was going to say, too, when we talk about Senator Moss is our Senate co-chair for the Legislative Municipal Caucus, made up of nearly three dozen former municipal officials elected or employed at the municipal level. And you know, that's one of the things I think we see so helpful in having more and more municipal officials elected to the legislature is we start to see that these preemption issues aren't necessarily Republican or Democrat issues. It's being able to understand and know local government and know that we don't need to, you know, preempt all zoning on gravel mines. That's not a partisan issue. That it really is a local issue. That's a local health and safety and welfare issue. And individuals who worked in local government recognize that and understand that, regardless of their political affiliation.
And that divide, you know, sometimes obviously in Lansing you hear about the partisan divide, but on these issues, it's a divide between people who have served in local government and those who haven't. And so the more local officials who have been fed up, like I was in 2014, about the lack of understanding of our issues in Lansing, the more that they run for office and the more that we can change the conversation in Lansing.
You touched on something that I thought was really interesting early on, that you're a millennial and you were 25 on Southfield City Council. And we talk about the need to get the young people involved. You know, how was a fire able to, you know, light under you and you got involved with? There's so many others that you wish would get involved, but for whatever reason don't.
One of the things that I employed as a city councilman were goals, not quotas, but goals to get young people involved on our boards and commissions. And so one of the first initiatives that I really pushed forward was to look at our boards and commissions, do kind of an analysis of who's being represented and who wasn't, and meet certain benchmarks of we want to have so many people under 30 participating in the process. So not only did we change the composition of council with my election, but we changed all sorts of appointments as well with that frame of mind. And so it has made a difference. You know, I worked very well with my colleagues on the other end of the age spectrum. So this is, I ran for city council saying it would be just as unrepresentative if it was a council of all 25-year-olds as it was with a council of everybody that was 55 and up. And I think that resonated with folks. And so everybody's voice has to be heard at the table. And so now, interestingly enough, so I served on the city council and the least tenured member of city council was on council for 10 years. The most tenured member of city council was in city government for 50 years. Wow. And now, since I've left city council, there has been a 100% turnover on the city council. So it really is passing the baton to a new generation of leaders to step up and see Michigan for the next several decades.
Now, what was it? You mentioned, I think, early on in the conversation that you have a journalism background. What was it that made you want to get into politics in the first place?
I just like digging around. I need to know everything. Okay. And if there's a problem, I need to figure out who to reach out to and seek the answers. So I think that journalism degree has been very helpful for me as a councilman, as a state rep, and a state senator to seek out answers. And so that is something that inquisitiveness that I've brought with me to the legislature has been helpful. One of my big pet projects that you probably know about is expanding open records laws. As a city councilman, I was subjected to FOIA. My emails were subjected to a FOIA request. Our council business was subjected to a FOIA request. We were compliant. It was aggravating at times, but we followed the law. The state legislature and the governor aren't subjected to FOIA. We're one of only two states where the governor and the state legislature is not subjected to FOIA. And so that is, FOIA is like the journalist's lifeblood to get information and make sure that government actors are acting in the citizens' best interest. So I have been forceful. I've sought partnerships across the aisle successfully to keep pushing on our legislative efforts to at long last subject state government to the open records laws that local communities are subjected to, right, as well. And that's that journalism degree speaking.
Yeah. As a former journalist myself, it baffles my mind how they can go into caucus and the Republican, the Dems go in their caucuses and all do whatever they do behind those doors. And they come out and make all these decisions. And it's
that's
like,
right.
And then they complain to city councils about, you know, oh, you included three people on this email and that kind of thing. It's like that the hypocrisy is mind boggling.
There's a Detroit news reporter who said I should wear a GoPro during Sunshine Week, where we talk about these government transparency laws. I said I was open to it.
Oh, you might get in trouble with your caucus.
Probably. I've been in trouble before, so.
But it's interesting. You are a Democrat. And, I haven't really kind of got to the root to my one question, which was, did you have parents or family that was involved in politics? Or what decided you, besides your just inquisitive nature, to get into politics? Was there some kind of family history, or how did that come about?
It was interesting. So, of course, we were very politically aware household. I just remember, watching Peter Jennings at dinner every night. We just were conscious of what was going on.
Yeah.
My mom was an MEA member and was the MEA representative in her school. And so, we were very politically aware, but no, my parents never ran for anything. I mean, they certainly volunteered on campaigns here and there over the years. But really, I met Brenda Lawrence when I was right out of high school, who was the mayor of Southfield. Yep. That's exactly right. And Brenda Lawrence took me under her wing and showed me the ropes and was just a strong influence on me and really displayed what a public servant ought to be, especially at the local level. And then it was, you know, very much a tying of the moment, you know, coming full circle when I was elected to the city council and she was the mayor. And then in 2014, she went off to Congress and I went off to the state house. And of course, we talk still every day about our experiences now in our different levels of government. So my parents definitely instilled it within me. But, you know, Brenda Lawrence, was foundational in my desire to serve.
Okay. And are you Southfield born and bred then? And
you got it.
Where'd you end up going?
I am Southfield. So I went to Michigan State. So I went through public high school here locally and then to Michigan State. And Michigan State, as you know, is 4 miles up the road from the state capitol. And so when I was a sophomore at Michigan State in the journalism school, I did an internship for the state rep for Southfield, Paul Condino, at the time. And did a lot of his comms work with that communications background. And then later returned to Lansing as a staffer for another state representative from Southfield, Rudy Hobbs. So I had just an interesting amount of experience, even at a young age, having run for the city council, just having prior served as an intern and a legislative staffer. So, I tell people, I've packed in all this experience, but that just means I'm going to be a has-been at age 40. So it's not that impressive.
That's good. So did you work at the state news? I'm a CM lifer from Central Michigan. So.
So I don't want to get into too much trouble, but there was a divide, the journalism students who went to work for the state news and the journalism students who definitely didn't work for the state news. Right. I didn't work for the state news.
Okay. That's funny. So you talked a little bit about, of course, you are a Democrat, but one of the things I've saw in some of my readings about you, you do seem to make a real conscious effort to kind of work across the aisle. I'm sure that's probably something you have to do because you are in the minority in the Senate. What's your approach to that and how do you kind of tackle that?
It's interesting. I found myself at this weird intersection where even just last week or 2 weeks ago, CPAC, the conservative organization, measured all of these votes that we've taken this last session. And out of 148 legislators, I'm the least conservative. I'm fine with that. But I'm also consistently ranked in this MERS news poll, that's a local Lansing news outlet, as one of the most effective Democrats. I meet in that intersection where I'm true to who I am and I'm open to having conversations. I'm very good at convincing people that my point of view is correct. But also, I'm also not adversarial. And one of my closest friends and partners, that partnership formed when he was the chair of the local government committee, and I was the top ranking Democrat on the local government committee my first term, and that's Lee Chatfield, the conservative Republican Speaker of the House now. And we found a lot of common ground to work on. And so, yeah, I'm going to advocate for my values and my community, which instilled those values within me. But I everything that I do, I really do think, how can I make this bipartisan or nonpartisan first? What can I do to loop in a Republican to take a second bill on the topic that I'm advocating for? So, not only with Lee Chatfield on a few bills that we actually got passed into law, they were Chatfield Moss packages that came out of the local government committee. On the open records stuff, I've worked with Republican Senator Ed McBroom. During this pandemic, I've worked alongside Senator Ruth Johnson, our former Republican Secretary of State, on several issues. So I always think about, what's the bipartisan approach first? And have found success. And I don't lie to people. They know where I'm coming from. They know what I'm going to have to tell them. I'm not with you on this issue. I'm a little bit farther left than you are on this issue. And so I'm an honest broker. In Lansing, and I think I found some good success there. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, well, Chris, I was going to ask you to chime in.
I think one of the things that we appreciate so much, there's from the advocacy side of things, outside working with legislators, there are always those legislators that we kind of gravitate towards, those who are thoughtful, who are willing to listen to all sides of an argument and who are willing to work with you to find compromise and to find the solution to a problem. And Senator Moss has always been one of those individuals, not only from the standpoint of listening to us, but then also working with his colleagues and finding that common ground where, regardless of where your political affiliation is or your leanings, you know, is there a solution that we need to get to? And how do we get there together without either of us compromising our ideology? And Senator Moss has always been so effective at that. I think that's when you see him ranked as one of the most effective legislators in town. That's why, because he knows how to work regardless of where he is on the spectrum.
And I think some of that started when I was on the city council. We were not partisan on the city council. And in a community like Southfield, we were all Democrats. So there were no partisan bickerings. But in order to reach out to people of a different generation and different experiences than me, I had to work with them. I couldn't be adversarial. I had to be tenacious to get my points across and my policies passed, but I had to work with other people. And so that's just the frame of mind that I came into Lansing with.
What are some of the other communities in your Senate district that you represent now?
I represent 11 thriving communities in Southern Oakland County, 10 cities, and Royal Oak Township, a township in my district, but it's Farmington, Farmington Hills, Southfield, Lathrop Village, Oak Park, Huntington Woods, Pleasant Ridge, Ferndale, Hazel Park, and Madison Heights.
Okay, so again, mostly all predominantly fairly Democrat, most of those cities. So, Chris, you kind of already asked a little bit about being co-chair of the Municipal Caucus. Senator Moss, explain a little bit what you guys are trying to do with that group. Again, it's a bipartisan group. And what are some things you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, it's bipartisan. It's bicameral. Chris approached me and said, we have a list of everybody who served in local government. There's no reason why we can't come together on some of these issues. I said, you're absolutely right. And so we tapped everybody who had a role in local government prior to coming to the legislature. And we've had mostly several seminars. We did one on revenue sharing. We did one on Headley. And we've done important ways that we can communicate on what we experienced on the local level and how we can communicate that back to our colleagues who don't have that experience at the local level. And so, you know, honestly, and I'm curious, Chris, I don't know if you know the answer. We have more local officials now who have served in local government in the legislature than when I started. So we are growing in numbers, and I think that's a good thing. So hopefully this local government caucus is just gonna, you know, have an oversized influence on policy, and that the result of that is that local units of government are going to be assisted, helped, provided resources, advocated for. So this caucus is off to a really, really good start.
Yeah, we've been so impressed. This cohort, this term, this legislative term, you know, where we've got up to, you know, I think it's close to 36 legislators with former municipal background. That is the most that any of us on staff can remember, having worked specifically within a city or village. And so being able to pull all of you together with the common background, we're starting to be able to tackle some of those issues and get a better understanding that all of you can share with your colleagues about, you know, Headley. Headley's a complicated issue, but you're all officials who understand what that means within a city's budget. And being able to take that knowledge and that understanding and then share it with your colleagues within each of the four caucuses is one of the most important things that can happen for us to really start to tackle those issues that, you know, we've got a broken municipal finance system in Michigan. And you all are the best cheerleaders, the best champions for change, because you recognize and understand that problem.
You know what's interesting about the caucus too? It's not just former city council members. Gary Howell, former city attorney. Marshall Bullock, a state senator who was Mike Duggan's, one of his district directors in the city of Detroit. So it's just really, we all have just these varied, extensive backgrounds in local government, and it's been a great experience to be a part of that.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, just of course, we're all going through this pandemic right now. What's it been like, you know, from a state politician perspective on just trying to learn to do things differently during this time? What's it been like to be a senator as there's been so much need and so many different things have happened?
It's been wild, right? It's definitely been trying, and we ran to serve in good times. and unfortunately in bad times. And so we've had to play the hand that we've been dealt in this legislative session. So I'm looking for opportunities as a state lawmaker on things that I can tangibly solve. And so one of the very first initiatives I came out with was with Senator Ruth Johnson, Republican, to take on price gouging during a state of emergency. You know, we've seen essential supplies at the start of this crisis in March, those essential supplies, those prices skyrocketed. And we have a very weak price gouging law here in Michigan compared to other states. And so we worked hand in hand, bolstered by Attorney General Dana Nessel, to propose solutions to take on price gouging during a state of emergency. And so those are things, at the start of the crisis, we had so few answers. The first cases were actually in and around my district. So we had so few answers and so many people reaching out to us. My cell phone was, I would wake up with messages and I would go to bed with work yet undone. So it was just very a tough time for everybody. But I was looking for opportunities on issues that I knew I could tangibly resolve. And so that was just an example. So, I take it one day at a time, as probably everybody else has during this crisis. We are where we are. I know that my communities are adhering to the governor's executive directives. We don't have mask fights down here. We don't have, some of these demands down here because we were so impacted first. And it was really, really scary back in March here in Southern Oakland County. And so we're enduring. And I've been constant communication with my local mayors and asking what they need and trying my best to provide resources back home.
Going forward, what do you think things will be like, in a year or 2 years from now when we have the virus under control or a vaccine or whatever? Do you think it'll be kind of business as it was, or do you think we'll be kind of different moving forward as far as everything from the way we conduct our meetings? Right now councils are meeting virtually to, having the businesses and everything. How do you kind of see things moving forward?
So on that end, I've talked to Chris and the team a lot on composing that or helping to advocate for an executive directive that allowed for remote meeting because we have to do something to keep business going in a safe way. And I know that MML was a big advocate for finding that balance between the public's right to observe their council and participate in their council meetings, but also protecting the health and safety of city employees and council members. I would like to go back to normal at some point. I'm a big fan of, opening up City Hall, taking the heat from constituents. They don't come to Lansing, right? There's nothing like direct advocacy at the city council meetings. And I watch those viral videos of people who have said some really kooky things at city council meetings around the country. And I kind of like talk to other people. I was like, you obviously have never served on a city council before. This is just normal. So I'm looking forward to the return of the day where people can go to their council meetings, take their 3 minutes, blast their favorite council member. I've been blasted before, and show and display that city council is open for business. I'm sure a lot of the tech provisions are going to remain in place here and there, but I'm looking forward to the day where City Hall is open up again.
Sure, of course. As we are too. So what's next for you? I know you're in, I think your second term is
first term in the Senate.
So you're not up for election until
2022.
So what's kind of your short and long term goals politically and otherwise?
So one of the things, what's that?
Revenue sharing.
Revenue sharing. Yes, absolutely. Revenue sharing, restoring revenue sharing. Watching this redistricting process play out, I'm very interested in election law here in Michigan. I actually drafted the first round of an independent redistricting commission in the legislature. We could have passed it in the legislature to create an independent redistricting commission. It took a ballot proposal to get that done. So I'm interested in the redistricting process that's going to come out next year. I will have a new district, whatever it may be. But continuing to push for open records laws, accountability in state government. And again, be the forceful voice against measures that strip local control and be the forceful voice in favor of restoring funding to our local communities.
Okay. And where do you see yourself beyond your second term of this is senator?
You know, I don't know. You got a nice polo on there. I'll join the MML team.
Would there could be a newspaper publisher, Moss, or
we'll see. We'll see. We'll see what plays out. You know, I learned to take it, you know, one step at a time. I loved every minute on being on city council. I did not use city council as a platform to run for the legislature. I had had enough. I'd had enough of the state attacking local units of government and saw an opportunity to run. So I take it one step at it, one day at a time. Who knows what the future will bring.
Well, we had an event recently at the League with Mayor Pete Buttigieg, former U.S. president candidate. And former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. And I looked it up, and there's only been three presidents that were former mayors, U.S. presidents.
Really? Who are they?
They were, I wrote them down, Andrew Johnson, Grover Cleveland, and Calvin Coolidge. Not necessarily some of our best presidents, but they were all mayors.
That's right. Well, that's a good trivia question for some trivia night.
I was surprised by that. So, Chris, anything else for the senator before we let him go? I know he's very busy.
No, it's just, again, we really appreciate all that you've done and continue to do. And the partnership we have with you is special to us. And we're glad to honor you in this way and looking forward to working with you for six more years.
Yeah, it's special to me too, really. And the award really does mean a lot, and I'm going to treasure it.
Well, good. Well, thank you very much. Thank you again. Congratulations. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Senator Moss. Until next time, this was the We Love Where You Live podcast. Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.nml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.